In this episode, oh yeah, we're talking about the Facebook video views scandal, but I'm going to tell you what it really means and how Facebook got into this mess.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
What up? What up? All right, I'm on the road this week and recording this podcast from Seattle, Washington, where I'm attending a medical conference for the National Society of Genetic Counselors, where 7 or 8 of my clients are all exhibiting. And, you know, one of our clients, 23andMe, the genetics juggernaut, is, they're up here also, and you may know them from the TV commercials and maybe you've seen the commercials. They're absolutely great, and we've been working with them for the last couple of years. In Vancouver, I'll be with them in a couple of weeks for another thing that we're doing. And, you know, I think that we're going to have like 5 members of the Wirebuzz team in Canada with us, and I'm still waiting on my passport to get renewed. And in case it doesn't arrive in time, I've actually been growing out my mullet, which can help me get into Canada. You know, it's mullets are really the Canadian passport, right? It's business up front, party in the back, and that's my backup strategy, eh? In a moment, I'm going to walk you through what's really going on in the Facebook video view scandal, and it's really different than what you've heard elsewhere in the news. But first, here's the latest news that really matters for video marketing masters. Aspen Ski Company, which Aspen's one of my favorite places in the whole world, Aspen's going to be featuring short videos using familiar mind, body, spirit theme as a centerpiece of its marketing efforts for the 3rd straight winter this year. You know, I'm a former ski tour guide. I love skiing. It's one of the places in my life where I get, I'm just never closer to God than when I'm skiing. And one of my friends from college is on ski patrol at Aspen, and I'm going to be up there with him skiing some really amazing terrain that he told me I'll never get to ski at any other time in my life. And I'll be doing that Ajax Mountain sometime right after New Year's, and I absolutely can't wait. And it's great to see that Aspen's got great results 2 years in a row with its video marketing efforts and is going to be doing it again for this season. The Revelance Group and SteamSend released a poll of 266 marketing executives that pinpointed that marketers who incorporate video in email campaigns generate higher monthly revenues than those who don't use video, and their higher monthly rates are up. Now, this shouldn't be a surprise to you as a frequent listener of this podcast. I've been telling you about this, right? Almost every week I talk to you about adding video into your email because you're going to get 2 times the open rate just by using the word video in the subject header, and you're going to get 3 times the click-through rate when you use video with email. And it's a really awesome, powerful tool because, well, them results, they don't lie. And so you want to make sure that when given the opportunity, if you're doing an email campaign, optimize it, baby, and make sure you add a video. And as of writing, Gmail, Yahoo Mail, Outlook, and Android devices don't support HTML5 video in email. Apple Mail, some iOS devices, and Outlook.com do. So really what I want you to be doing is I want you to be, instead of putting a video in the email, I want you to be using an image with a play button, okay? And then you link that image from your email to the landing page that you want people to go to, and that'll help you circumvent all the HTML5 issues and spam problems. The Pentagon gave a controversial British PR firm over $500 million to run a top-secret video propaganda program in Iraq, which included short TV segments made in the style of Arabic news networks and fake insurgent videos, which could be used to track people who watch them. Now, this is according to a former employee who broke the story. Now, it's interesting because I literally had this conversation with members of my team probably like 6-7 months ago. And when you work with me, I throw a series of what ifs around. Well, what if we did this? And what if we did that? And as we were in a conversation about how businesses should be tracking their prospects to with video so they know which one of their prospects is really interested, and then the sales team only has to follow up with leads that are hot and not burn time wasting making cold calls to leads that'll never convert. As we were having that conversation, I said, wait, if we could be tracking our sales leads and our clients track their sales leads, couldn't we also flip the script and track terror suspects who are looking at how to create certain types of, you know, bomb materials by looking at videos? And the reply that I got from my team was, oh, you know, that's old school. That technology is already available in the military, and it looks like somebody beat me to it. And they paid $500 million for this. I at least could have brought that price down by 5%. Literally. I mean, without even running the numbers, 5%, I could have cut it just like that. Hey, my friend Eric Enga of Stone Temple Consulting is in the news. He was honored as Search Marketer of the Year. Look, you probably know me as the video marketing guy, and I'm cool with that. But historically, you know, I've been a digital marketer. I've specialized in search and social and content and email marketing. And the guys at Stone Temple, Eric Enga and Mark Traphagen, they're my homies. These are the guys that are on the speakers tour with me. And I always see them when we're speaking at marketing conferences, really good, solid dudes that are very smart. And if you go back to our first 10 episodes, I've got two podcasts with Mark Traphagen about Mark and Eric's really smart weekly video series that's called Here's Why. And it's really about Here's Why with search and social and content. And I think you'd find it interesting. I'll make sure there's a link on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/43. And there's also another episode about search engine optimization for your videos. Oh, and I think I might have shared the story about the night that we met up at Fenway Park, and because my plane was delayed in Chicago, I didn't get to my seats in Fenway until the start of the eighth inning, also known in Boston as Sweet Caroline. Eric and Mark, they're literally the smartest dudes in digital marketing, really great minds, and have been trailblazing since we all got started way back in the day, and it's great to see Eric get honored. Really nice. Well-deserved, E. Well-deserved. Adweek is reporting, just as acquisition speculation is heating up, Twitter has gotten its mojo back. Interesting, right? It can largely be thanks to the few weeks of live streaming high-interest events, mainly the NFL's Thursday Night Football and Monday night's presidential debates. I don't know if you guys watched it on Twitter. I sure as hell didn't. And as a former investigative news reporter for Clear Channel, this story triggered my journalistic spider senses. It felt like an article that Twitter's PR team got created by a friendly reporter. Now, this happens more often than you would ever think. It was literally a daily occurrence where one of my sources was bringing me information and trying to get a friendly story created. And when you're in the media, sources leak you information that benefits them before it breaks. And you, as the reporter, end up looking brilliant. You look like you're in the know, well-connected. And then, just like the Netflix series House of Cards, when your sources need a favor and you have to return the favor, or your sources will take their insider information to another member of the media who's willing to play ball. Let me read that Adweek title one more time for you. It's really interesting now. Here it is. Just as acquisition speculation is heating up, Twitter has gotten its mojo back. Adam Bain, Twitter's COO, explained it this way. He said, quote, "It's just an extension of what we've always been doing." Interestingly enough, the Walt Disney Company has hired a financial advisor to consider a bid for Twitter. Now, according to the report in Bloomberg News, citing unnamed sources, Twitter has begun a process to weigh a potential sale after Disney expressed interest in exploring the details. Now, I think this is an important development because Twitter's leadership, they have to know that their social network has reached peak value before Twitter's value falls and those invested get stuck owning something that's, you know, less valuable than today. Twitter's leadership is considering pulling the ripcord, opening their golden parachutes, and cashing out. You know, for a long time, I've just felt the rush of the helium leaving the Twitter balloon. And recently, Twitter's just been hard at work doing some different things. You know, these recent traditional media syndication deals that Twitter's been announcing, like the live broadcasting of the presidential conventions, debates, and NFL games. Well, they feel like staging, you know, like it's like staging a home to be purchased. It feels like Twitter staging their social network to be acquired, and those heavily invested are planning their graceful exits. It's like, here's some big wins that really don't have much big significant impact, but add cachet to our brand, because now you can see how Twitter's going to go in the future down the road. Time for us, hit the ripcord, we're out. Here's my core issue with Twitter. The most successful tactic for generating new followers and growing your influence on Twitter is not an organic marketing tactic with honest audience growth. You know, there's just way too much chatter out there on Twitter. And like Simon and Garfunkel said, there's people talking without listening. Too many talkers and nobody listening for a social network is el beso de la muerte. You know what that is? The fucking kiss of death. To prove my point, if you want to create really valuable, helpful, or compelling content and then share it on Twitter, you're going to never grow as fast with your followers as the most successful artificial tactic known as ad, follow, flush. And where you use a third-party service like the Moz tool Follower Wonk to game the Twitter system and you target people by searchable key phrases. So let's say for the sake of discussion, you are a medical device manufacturer and you are a marketer for that company and you want to make sure that you're targeting hospital buying teams, right? So you go into Follower Wonk and you search for all the people that have hospital and whatever that appropriate title is, and then you target them by adding, they reciprocate because they're polite, they follow you, and then a week later or so, you go out and flush all the people and you add like 100 new ones a week, and naturally people just kindly reciprocate after you do that, after you add. They follow, then a week later, you flush people who didn't add you. And the ad follow flush is literally the most successful covert Twitter growth tactic, and it's total fraud because your growth isn't authentic. And when I evaluate the real health of a social network, the organic engagement signals of real people having real conversations and growing their influence, like to me, it's just like a snowball, a small, very small snowball that would fit in your hand that gets pushed and builds into an avalanche. And the only indicators that are real value to me are organic indicators of engagement. And the other issue I have is that the peaking of the number of people on Twitter and the time they spend on the site is going down. And so that's why Twitter's value is clearly peaked and it's time for their inner circle to hit the eject button. And for me, those words are written on the subway wall. A social network without significant two-way engagement echoes the sounds of silence. Another PR manufactured publicity story happened this week when Victoria's Secret angel Miranda Kerr, who's engaged to the CEO of Snapchat, was somehow photographed by TMZ wearing the yet-to-be-announced and released Snapchat spectacles, and she made a spectacle of it by going out in public in front of paparazzi. Now, I'm sure it's just, you know, totally coincidental that this guy's super hot girlfriend went out on a stroll in public with his yet-to-be-announced glasses, and TMZ just randomly happened to be there, right? I'm sure that is a pure coincidence. You know, I'm really like super, I'm not even lukewarm. I'm like cold on not Miranda Kerr, but the whole concept of these spectacles or glasses like Google Glass. You know, about a year and a half before Google released its Google Glasses, and this is like 2010, 2011, something like that. My friends at Google sent me two pairs of Google Glass to Wirebuzz. And when I was speaking at conferences about their topic, they asked me to pull it out and show people. And instantly, I mean, this is like right before I just started seeing mock-up drawings of it. And instantly, within the first couple of hours, people in the office and me, we were all looking at like, what do we do with this thing? It's a weird tool. And when you have a camera pointing in somebody's face, people are less likely to open up. The whole goal of engagement or interaction or being out in public or is to meet people and to have conversations. And this tool, the Google Glass on your face with a camera on it, which looks very similar in functionality to what Snapchat is rolling out with its spectacles, it just put a wall up in front of everybody because people didn't want to share, because people felt like if they had a conversation with you, you were going to be filming it and you were going to use it against them. And that's why I find myself totally lukewarm, or I should say frigidly cold, on this topic. Oh, I've got to tell you this really classic business story. Wirebuzz's director of video production, Strons Vanderplug, and I were flying across the country on Southwest. We were leaving somewhere in Florida, and we were headed back to Arizona. And you know when you've got like some, like Strons was up against the, I think he had an aisle, and I had a window. You'll know when you see the photo that I took covertly. And so we had an empty seat in the center, and we were just having a conversation like everybody does about how, looks like we're going to get lucky and we're going to get this open seat so we can stretch out as we fly across the country. And just before they closed the door, and we had the last row left on the whole plane that had an open center seat, just as they went to close the door, in walked the 6'5" or 6'6" center of an NFL football team. I don't want to tell you the team, and I'm not going to drop the guy's name, but we had to wedge this poor dude. I looked it up online, what his size was. 6'6", yeah, I think 6'6", 315 or 350 pounds. Dude was huge. His shoulders were so big and so massive that Strons on one side had to sit at a 45-degree angle in his seat, and I had to sit twisted at a 45-degree angle in my seat, just so we could wedge this dude into his. And within no time, the football player, the center, fell asleep. Strons and I friggin' miserable for the rest of the flight. And I took a selfie of the two of us unwillingly cuddling up with him as we flew across the country. You can get access to that photo, wirebuzz.com/43. Wirebuzz.com/43. This week, Facebook got into a sticky mess over the reporting of video views, and predictably, the media echo chamber got the story absolutely wrong. So let's take a few moments. You know, I think it would be helpful if I'm going to go and break down that real story for you to explain what Facebook did, why they did it, and share pieces of the best articles that got this story absolutely right. Well, the Meet Edgar blog did a great job boiling down this topic. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm a Meet Edgar customer. They know nothing about me. I've never had a conversation with them, and I'm not paid to tell you that their article was great. But in this article, they wrote, quote, "To be fair, Facebook didn't lie about video's performance. It just wasn't accurate. You could chalk it up to a math error, basically." You know, the controversy is centered around how Facebook reports the average watch time in your video analytics, which is basically the average amount of time people pay attention to your video. In the past, they were reporting that metric based only on people who had watched the video for at least 3 seconds. It makes sense why Facebook would do that, because their videos autoplay in the newsfeed, and they only count views when the video's been watched for at least 3 seconds. We'll talk about how Facebook decides what a view is in a moment, but here's the quote-unquote controversy. Some marketers were upset that Facebook excluded those 0 to 3 second viewers from the average watch time metric. This had the effect of inflating the average watch time, so it appeared as though people were watching videos on Facebook longer than they actually were. So what did Facebook do? They added those viewer metrics back in, and everybody's watch time went down dramatically, but only from a statistical perspective. This issue was blown widely out of proportion by the mainstream media, who are just looking to stir up some controversy so they can get shares and clicks. And quite candidly, it's a bit of a complex topic. So you can't really expect a novice or a reporter for some mainstream media outlet to be on top of it and to understand the nuance here. In practical terms, this change doesn't matter at all, because the viewers who weren't being counted weren't considered views in the first place. As an advertiser, You weren't paying for those impressions anyway, so why should they be included in the metrics at all? I don't think they should be, because now your audience retention is based on people who only scrolled past your video in their newsfeed. It just doesn't make any sense why people were so shocked by this to begin with. So, first of all, Facebook wasn't doing anything sketchy in the first place. And the change, well, if anything, makes your data less accurate. I don't blame Facebook for doing this, because they're just giving their customers what they wanted. But here's why none of it even matters. The only real change here is what the numbers say, not what they mean for your business. It's not like Facebook is taking away ROI. What worked before still works. They just adjusted the absolute number down, which isn't even useful. You know, as a marketer, you should care more about the relative amount of time people watch your video compared to other videos. That's ultimately how you evaluate your video's performance. So long story short, this controversy is just more smoke and mirrors. It affected nothing from the practical point of view. And in my opinion, Facebook was doing it the right way the first time. Their metrics are actually less accurate now, but like I said, it really doesn't matter one way or the other. With that said, an article in Forbes was spot on this topic. Their author, whose name I'm about to butcher, Caleb Latreau. The article's title is "The Media Got It Wrong: What Facebook's Video Ads Issue Tells Us About Big Data Metrics." Now, Caleb explained that it's difficult to understand what the perceived controversy is and why many in the advertising community feel misled by Facebook's documentation. Now, the problem is, when Facebook got into the video marketing game, they decided to not follow YouTube's 30 seconds is equal to a view calculation. That's the industry standard, and YouTube's the standard bearer, right? They're like the gold standard when it comes to video. And when Facebook came to figure out how it was going to represent its numbers, it decided to not follow YouTube's lead. Now, the reason is Facebook wanted to, I guess, cook up some amazing metrics that showed Facebook was a real player in the video marketing space and how well video was performing on Facebook compared to YouTube. Now, remember, for the last several months, I've been telling you that the big Zuck has been quickly morphing Facebook into a video-first platform, because Zuck knows what's in the analytics. Your answers to your business problems are always in the analytics. And so Zuck knows that people are significantly more interested in video than any other type of content. You know, this story is just a minor consequence of Facebook's rapid business pivot to video, okay? They just kind of stepped in it because they were moving quick and they wanted to show great results. And if you think that this is more of a, you know, Facebook conspiracy, everybody in my office knew Facebook's 3-second view formula was a different metric of success than YouTube's. We actually talked about it in our strategy team meetings. When it comes up with clients, we bring it up. All that really does is add to a whole nother layer of confusion. And because Facebook clearly offered a very precise definition on their site that all of their video metrics that are uploaded natively would be defining a view as duration of at least 3 seconds. So it shouldn't be a shock to anyone, shouldn't be news to anyone who's paying attention that 3 seconds on Facebook was considered a view. And the other reason Wirebuzz has been fascinated with Facebook and their decision to classify a video view at 3 seconds is because most businesses challenging a market leader would have made the strategic mistake to accept YouTube's definition of 30 seconds as a view. Now, you notice I said they would have made a strategic mistake to accept YouTube's definition. Just a little nuance of redefining what is considered a video view on Facebook and autoplaying all of their native videos, then publishing the terms on their site, allowed Facebook to demonstrate really astonishing audience video viewing metrics, and it made Facebook become a major YouTube competitor in under a year. That's a really smart strategic business decision. And I'd be very surprised if there were long-term ramifications of this news. That little nuance, it gave Facebook cover to quickly claim that their platform was competing with YouTube. And just like that, over a very short amount of time, Facebook became a serious competitor in the video marketing space, until one of two things happened. And I want you to pick which one of these options makes the most sense for you. Either people who hadn't been paying close attention figured it out, and then it became a controversy. Okay, that's option number one. Or option number two is YouTube's PR team tipped off a friendly reporter who did YouTube a solid and sparked a firestorm controversy about Facebook, knocking Facebook down a little bit. Now, what do you think is more probable? You see, my spider senses are tingling on this story also because I know Facebook's been pulling away billions and billions of dollars, ad dollars from that would have just normally gone directly to YouTube. Either way, I knew it was just a matter of time before the shit hit the fan, and it happened this week for Facebook. And there's an important marketing lesson for you here if you choose to accept it. If you can separate your ego from your view count, you just might learn that there's something much more valuable than video views. So what is that? It's ROI, right? The whole goal is return on investment. Now, maybe you've seen that Wirebuzz's YouTube channel, where my colleagues and I here at the office share our biggest video marketing tips and our biggest tricks in short videos. And on that channel, you know, I don't look to see how many people watched our videos. So I'm sure, you know, more videos will help with the overall search results and the shares. But, you know, I can only care about the right people watching those videos. And if my video goes viral and I get a million views, that's great for my ego. It allows my dome to swell. But a vast majority of those views, like 99.9% of those views, won't convert into new customers. And when I say those views, I'm talking about viral video views. So what's the value of it, right? And if they don't convert into new customers and I'm getting, let's say, a million views on a video, what do I really care about that view count? The only thing that it does is it benefits ego. And I'm only interested in the right people watching those videos. So who's the right person to watch that video? Well, it's somebody who wants to buy something. Maybe not now, but down the road. Or maybe it's somebody that I can help educate, who can be an evangelist for me, who's going to refer me the next time one of their friends needs to amplify their sales or marketing goals, and I'm going to show them how they solve their business problem, leveraging the power of video. Now, does that make sense to you? Those videos are super valuable to my team and to our clients because we've entered a new era. You know, now we're in this vetting era where every potential customer has the ability to do their own research, independent of talking to one of my salespeople. And by the way, do you know what I mean by vetting? I brought this term up, and whenever I bring up vetting to people, I get blank stares. Vetting is the behind-the-scenes research and background checking that we all do while we're working towards selecting the perfect vendor, or when we go to Yelp and we're reviewing restaurants, we're reading reviews. Those are also, that's a vetting process. Examining a new hire's social media post to see if they're a little cray-cray, or a presidential campaign pulls out all the skeletons from some potential vice presidential candidate's closet. All of that is vetting. And prospects today, they vet everything. And as such, I just saw the latest research about this topic. Today, prospects look at 5 pieces of content about a business's product or service on a company's website, on their YouTube channel, or their social networks before they ever pick up the phone or send an email requesting to talk to a sales rep. Let's rehash this. Today, prospects look at 5 pieces of content before they pick up the phone and have a conversation. So there's really no reason to talk to a salesperson. In fact, people don't want to talk to a salesperson. I don't know about you. The last thing I want to do is get on the phone with a salesperson. I'd rather start researching and looking. And the beauty of having Google in a browser is you're able to go and look for your information. And the sales rep's job has changed drastically. And prospects are now reviewing 12 pieces of content about a business's product or service before they make a buying decision. The salesperson's job has morphed as the prospect starts changing the way they're looking for information. And so when we started accepting that in our own business, we saw a drastic reduction in the way that we took leads from when they met us to when we converted them. We actually decreased 67% of our sales time by making sure we had the right content that our prospects were looking for when they got onto our website. And 90% of users say that seeing a video about a product is helpful in their buying decision. Now, trying to select the right profitable topics for your business is really the hardest part. And that's why, to be helpful, we created a free topic selection worksheet that's available to the listeners of this podcast. And you can get your hands on it by going to wirebuzz.com/topics. That's wirebuzz.com/topics. You know, I've spent a lot of time over the history of this podcast talking about the importance of using videos to boost your ROI. And I'd rather have a marketer focused on ROI than views. But if you're still focused on views, I'd be much more interested in natural views over artificially inflated 3-second view counts, right? Well, now that Facebook has changed public perception about their platform, about their social network, being an environment that's video first, I'd expect Facebook to adjust its metrics that start to more closely compare to YouTube's. But the only thing that's going to keep that from happening quickly is if Facebook actually, you know, if Facebook's actual 30-second video viewing audience is drastically lower than YouTube's. And if that's the case, and it's exactly what I suspect, that YouTube's 30-second viewing audience is so much larger than Facebook's, then Facebook's going to continue to define a view by its own terms and put itself in the right light. Now, this topic feels like a long way from being settled. Stay tuned to Video Marketing Mastery as we're going to update you on this hot topic as it continues to progress. All right, well, in this episode, we covered a lot of territory. I told you about Aspen Ski Company that's running its third year of video marketing promotions leading up to the ski season, and that's awesome. I told you about the Pentagon, and the Pentagon spent over $500 million to run a video, covert video campaign in Iraq targeting Al-Qaeda and ISIS. I told you about how Twitter got its mojo back, and I kind of gave you the behind the scenes and what I believe is playing out. I let you know Walt Disney has hired a financial advisor to consider a bid for Twitter, and Twitter is on the market. And my core issue with Twitter is their most successful new follower generation tactic isn't an organic marketing tactic with real, honest audience growth. And there's way too much chatter out there. So on Twitter, it feels like everybody is talking without listening. And the way that people are gaming the system to grow on Twitter, their influence is by using a tactic called ad flush follow, which is the most successful tactic to grow your followers, but it's an absolute fraud. And when that happens, you know, it's almost like mad cow's disease. Eventually, it starts eating itself. I also told you that Victoria's Secret angel Miranda Kerr is engaged to the CEO of Snapchat, whoop-de-doo, sucks to be us. And then I also gave you a little overview on Strons van der Ploeg and I being on an airplane with a NFL football player in the center seat on Southwest. You can see that photo, wirebuzz.com/43. And then Facebook got into its sticky mess, which I broke down for you, explained why the media got it wrong, how you can chalk this up to mostly a business decision and a math error, basically, okay? And I also talked with you about why you should be focused on getting the right views and not mass quantity views. And the more you look at the view count and you attach that to ego, the more you're off track in using those videos to generate higher ROI. We discussed how prospects are now viewing 5 pieces of content about a business's product or service on that company's website before they pick up the phone and talk to a salesperson. And we also found out that prospects are now viewing 12 pieces of content about a business's product or service before they make a buying decision. And when we implemented that at Wirebuzz, I shared that we dropped our time that it took in our sales cycle by 67%. Look, if you want to know where to get started and are trying to figure out what the right profitable topics are for your business, you can go to our free worksheet that we created for you. It can be accessed at wirebuzz.com/topics. And if you love this podcast, if I'm providing you great information, I need you to do me a solid. Here it is. Tell your friends, spread the word. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, subscribe so you get the latest episode sent directly to you. And behind the scenes, In the meantime and in between time, the team at Wirebuzz will continue to bring you the latest information in video marketing so you can be a friggin' master.